Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Trek Picard on Paramount Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 5, Imposters. Aaron, how'd you feel about this imposter-filled episode?
I felt vindicated because I was saying, oh man, you know who would really be awesome if they got back on this show? Rolaren. And guess who came back on the show? Michelle Forbes as Rolaren. I was really pleased by that. I was also really pleased by Worf kicking some more ass and in general being awesome. I thought it was cool that Rolaren was revealed to be his handler. I don't know what they're doing with Jack.
Sure.
Like, he whips out this this John Wick combat maneuvering, which was cool, but it kind of came out of left field. And, you know, this with, like, you know, this the red vines and the red door and the various female voices calling him home. I don't know. Because we're doing a little pre-show banter and we're talking about, like, what are they suggesting with him? Was he, you know, replaced with, like, a Khan type super soldier? You know, because this is supposed to be the Wrath of Khan season, and they kind of hinted the Khan type stuff, super soldier type stuff in last season. But you're like, well, when would that would have happened? You know, Beverly's been with him since he was born. Like, if he was a genetically engineered super soldier, she would know, right? And she wouldn't be like, oh, you're the son of Picard. And then I'm like, well, maybe he's a changeling. He got replaced a changeling. But, like, why would he be killing other changelings? I know that. You know, like, Odo is, broadly speaking, opposed. There's probably a lot of others in the Great Link that are. Just nothing makes sense. And it's like, am I tuning in to see The Adventures of Jack Crusher? Or am I tuning in to see Picard and Riker and Beverly and Worf and everybody have a lot of fun? I'm doing the latter. So every time we focus a whole episode on Jack, which was, this is like, I guess I would say 50% of the episode was about him and his mental state and him freaking out. It lost me a bit. So I thought this was, everything Jack Crusher, I just like, oh God, I'm so bored by. What about you?
No, they're definitely ramping up the Jack of it all. And that's okay. I feel like we're in the middle of the season where I want answers to these questions, right? Because they've been hinting at this stuff all season, practically, for at least for the last two episodes, really heavily. They can't drag it out too much longer without starting to give me some information. So I'm okay with them going further into this. It does raise my eyebrow, though, watching this happen and going, what are the possibilities here? Because I just don't see them. And that could be a good thing if they can really surprise me and blow my mind with something. But I don't know. I'm on thin ice here with the show, right? Like, I think it'll hold, but I'm not. But I'm not certain, right?
You're the first guy out on the lake drilling a hole for a fish. Like, I don't know. I'm hearing some weird cracking noises, but that's just it settling, right?
Star Trek Picard. That's what it does.
It just creaks and groans and shatters. You've heard the old phrase, Jack's in all scenes, interested in none. And I feel like that really applies in this situation because when he is in all the scenes, I am like, my interest level immediately dips. Like, it's the opposite of Worf, where, like, when I see silver-haired Worf show up, I, like, lean forward in my seat and, like, oh, man, he's going to say or do something really awesome. When Jack's on the screen, I'm like, oh, God, it's this guy again. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm with you, right? I came to this show at the beginning for Picard and Data, and I stayed for the Q, and now I'm here for everybody else. But Jack's new to the crew, so it's going to take me some time to warm up to him, if I ever do.
And don't get me wrong, this guy is a massive upgrade in the B plots that they, in terms of just acting ability and charisma, like he is a huge upgrade in the android lady and the Romulan boy. Mm-hmm. But it's still not something I'm inherently interested in. I do think it's interesting that every single one of these seasons of Picard has centered around the Federation being evil, like
corrupted.
Like Romulans were taken up to the very top, and it was corrupted because it was a timeline corruption. This, it's like, oh, it's again another conspiracy to the top. Like, holy hell, it would explain why this is not a Federation that I remember in my youth. This is not the egalitarian socialist utopia. And they always hinted the fact that, like, outside Federation space, things can get pretty grim pretty fast. Like, the whole Maquis, they're bringing back the Maquis plot line, and that was one of the points of interest. That, like, it was essentially the Federation had sold these settlers to the Cardassians as a way to avoid a larger war with Cardassia, and a lot of Federation officers didn't think that right. A lot of colonists didn't think that was right. And they kind of led this kind of, I think it was led by the Bajorans, but a lot of people joined their common cause and fought against Cardassia. They were considered traitors by the Federation. They're considered terrorists by the Cardassians. So there's always been this kind of like shades of gray, but like now it seems like it's at the heart of the Federation.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It kind of kills me. I don't know. We've talked at length about this in previous seasons and stuff. One of the things that I love about Star Trek is its ideals, is its the core of goodness that surrounds humans in that show. And they really stripped all that away and kind of, I don't know, brought it back to like every other show that ever deals with politics or social issues or anything, and like there's just so much of that. I never see this pure utopia on television, like an aspirational idea of what human society could be, that it's kind of sad to lose that, for them to just go into yet another semi dystopian human future is kind of fucking boring. Like,
yeah, I know,
what the hell,
that was,
man?
The one, especially nowadays, there's not like you can't just go outside and find a utopian science fiction franchise. They're all kind of like this, seedy dystopia. And like it, I don't get me wrong, you can definitely go cringy in the other direction. Totally. I was recently reminded by a season one episode where the Enterprise gets involved between two planets. One planet is supplying a drug to another planet that it turns out they're essentially, drug dealers. And they're keeping this whole planet addicted. And it has destroyed their economy and destroyed their health and all this kind of stuff. And there's a scene where Wesley goes to Tasha Yar and's like, I just don't understand why people would do drugs. It's so, it's clearly, they lose themselves, and why they do it just to feel good. And, Tasha, the person who was raised on a fucking rape gang planet, it's kind of like trying to explain like why, people can be so lost and blah, blah, blah. But like, it's just so like, just say no, kids. And like at the end when Tasha wraps up, because Wesley's like, I guess I'll just never understand drug addiction. And Tasha's like, I hope you never have to, Wesley. Like the whole like rainbow shooting star, the more you know, is like completely over her head. That's fucking cringe. I remember being 12 years old watching that, like, oh my God, I'm still over 20 years away from fucking with drugs, but I'm still like, oh, this is fucking cringe, man. Mm-hmm. But like having Starfleet officers addicted to drugs and going through hardcore withdrawal and just, failing to have any kind of like semblance of mental health or control is not it. Is not, the opposite of crazy is still crazy.
Yeah. No, that's the way that Star Trek is going. As of the last several series, right? I mean, Disco was this. Is still this. I don't know. I stopped watching after season two.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just kind of bums me out because it was an example of something that you don't see very often, and now it's kind of tarnished.
And people might say, well, you know, it's a different time back then. Bullshit. The original series came out of the Vietnam era and civil rights struggle. The mm-hmm. Next Generation came at the height of the Cold War, the height of the AIDS epidemic. The warlords taking over Africa, people starving. Like, the world wasn't like this pleasant utopian place that reflected. No, like, Star Trek was always like,
yeah,
there is a better way, people. Uh-huh. And like, now it seems to content to be like, yeah, world's kind of shitty, even in the future, even 500 years from now, when we have essentially not even a pocket of this fucking universe is a place for equity and justice. Even if you have replicators and unlimited power, you're still going to have to worry about paying for medicine and being addicted. It's like, ah, God, it just, yeah, it's regrettable, I think.
And there's a line in this episode that made me tear my hair out. It comes from Kryn, who says there can be no utopia without crime. I don't know what definition of utopia people are working off of here.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe his personal view of utopia is he really loves to do crime. He's not happy unless he's doing crime. And so in his worldview, there can be no utopia without crime. But that is an asinine statement. I mean, the whole goal of utopia is to eliminate crime, right?
Yeah, you'd think.
He's, I mean, like, it's not the whole goal. The whole goal is to make people happy, healthy and fruitful. But like, the idea that there has to be crime, it may be in the sense of like there can be no good without evil, like a sense of contrast. That's, but like,
yeah,
that's stupid. That's just stupid. Like, that idea makes sense that you can't recognize good without evil, but you can live in a utopia without crime. As a matter of fact, that's my preferred version of utopia.
And it's not like you can't have conflict because the galaxy is a big place. There's going to be some places that, like, this is like Ian M. Bang's culture series does this all the time. Like, conflict comes within individuals, you know, wanting to succeed on their own merits. It comes from without, like, because not every culture wants to be part of a utopia. In fact, that sounds literally scary to a lot of cultures. Something pops in, like, hey, we can solve all your problems. You can live forever. You can do whatever you want. You just have to kind of join and do things the way we do it. That's really fucking scary.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
So, yeah, you can get a lot of cool storylines and still have a lot. I mean, obviously, TNG had a lot of, like, conflict and drama and exciting action. But it wasn't, like, the bridge crew betraying each other constantly and tearing each other down and just being bellicose assholes.
Yeah. But it seems indicative of the way that this franchise is headed, even when they're bringing it back to the old school stuff, right? To the stuff that was more hopeful. And
I was going to say, I think utopian. Strange New Worlds is markedly better in both.
Yeah.
And it might just be because, like, I think this team's kryptonite is they cannot sustain a storyline longer than an hour or two.
Yeah, you might be right.
I don't know why.
That's part of it. Like, they've wanted to make the storyline so big and so epic. When you've done, you know, every alien entity in the cosmos, what do you do next? Well, you turn inward, right? And you say, okay, now the new biggest challenge for Picard is his own morals, his own life, the things he's fought for. That becomes the biggest challenge for him yet. And
yeah,
I get that, but at the same time, it's really tearing down some of the things I loved about Star Trek.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
I guess you're going to get to the recap.
One thing I wish they would do is turn on the lights on these starships. I know we've said it before, said it again, but like, oh my God. Like, and also they all look the same. When the two changeling crew members beamed off of the shuttlecraft, I wasn't immediately obvious about whether they had gone to the Intrepid or the Titan, because all these starships look the fucking same now.
Yeah, I mean, kind of makes sense, but yeah, I don't know how to get around that problem.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, not, it's all often that you see the Enterprise interacting with another ship in the fleet. Usually it's, oh, we're interacting with the Romulans or the whatever, Ferengi. Right. I don't know.
It does look like they have, it's an intentional design choice to make these ships look more like military ships, like bare bulkheads, visible bolts, lots of steel, lots of handles and, you know, crunchy bits. You don't have like carpeting and padding and things like that. And it's all very dark and, you know, cobalt type coloring. Like I said, it's a choice. This thing looks a lot more like the inside of a submarine than it does like a hotel lobby. And that was kind of Next Generation's aesthetic. And maybe that was too extreme. You know, your bridge officers were schlepping around in pajamas on, you know, in a hotel lobby. But I don't know. This, I think it goes back to, I think that the original Enterprise has got a nice compromise between something that's purely utilitarian and bellicose, between something that's also warm lit and designed for, you know, humans to be comfortable using them.
Yeah. I mean, I love the
Kirk's bridge doesn't scream warship.
No, not necessarily.
The Titan bridge screams warship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I love the somewhat, let's just say outdated. Obviously, it's outdated at this point. Look at the Enterprise D. I think there's something super charming about the pastels and the materials used. All of the carpeted walls, they get me. I love it. But yeah, it's clearly outdated. They needed to do an update. I don't think this looks bad. I think it looks fine, but it is very dark, and I feel like that is yet another reflection of just how dark this show has become, and Star Trek as a franchise has become.
Yeah, it's funny, when the ship was on overload mode in the last episode, getting, you know, going through the birthing process, that was the only time where I thought like, ah, this looks like a Starfleet vessel. Like, it's intended to be overexposed, like Mr. The Sylvanian Man, right? But like, no, this actually looks about right. It's bright.
Uh-huh.
You can see. You can read fine text in this lighting.
Yeah. All right, we ready to get to the recap?
Yes, please.
Shields up. Here come the ads.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to the Podcast Maneuver.
All right, we start off where we left the Titan last episode. Systems are coming back online. Jack Crusher comes to the bridge and kills the entire crew while red tentacles take over his mind. Then he comes to in his quarters with a phaser in his hand. His eyes glow red and someone says, come home.
That someone is Vedic, right?
Sounds very Vedic to me, yeah.
I didn't recognize the voice in the previous episode, but like I definitely recognize both Vedic and Beverly.
Yeah, it's
Crusher
becoming clearer
in
this episode, right? Last episode, you could barely even tell somebody said something. This episode, right, you can identify particular entities saying it. So.
Right. Are these vines identifying? Are these helping him? Are they helping him identify who's changeling? Are they guiding him? Are they preparing him for what? You know, because like he doesn't really murder Starfleet officers. He murders a bunch of changelings, or I guess he kills them in self-defense.
Yeah.
Is that what they're going towards that? Because I don't know. It seems like he's a lot more disturbed and like if this was purely like, oh, my God, this thing's helping me see changelings, I don't think he would worry about it. But when he describes it to his mom, it seems like he's worried that something's wrong with him.
Yeah, this doesn't feel like something he's been battling for a long time, though we'll talk about that later in the episode. Or at least something he's been conscious of for a long time. It seems like it's something that he's just now becoming aware of and struggling with. So it was either something dormant in him, or it's something that he had his memory wiped and now that's that effect is fading, or he's being activated in some way. It's yeah, I don't know what's going on here with the red tentacles, but this is just a vision, right? He didn't actually kill the crew, right?
Not yet. Do you think that this is more or less intriguing to tell a story this way, where you have a person, you didn't know he's Picard's son, you find out he's Picard's son, you get to know him, and during the process, as you get to know him, you see that internally he's struggling with his Vine stuff. Do you think that's more intriguing to, like, you have this come out of nowhere and not know where it's going? Or do you think it would be better if, like, we saw, you know, he had this experience, you know, when he was alone in his room, some red energy entered him. Like, there's no fucking clue where this is or what it's coming from, as we see now.
I guess I might like to try the latter, because I would really like to know. I mean, I just want more information, and that would be a little bit more information. I would at least know that, like, he didn't know about this before. I would know that he didn't necessarily want it to happen. Here, he's very disturbed by it, but I don't know if this is something he signed up for, and he's just, like, feeling the effects, and they're surprising him, or... Well, I guess when he tells Beverly, there's something very wrong with me. That implies a lot.
We also don't know when he had the first vision. Like, did this coincide with the Federation beginning to hunt him? Is this something that he's had for years? But they're like, you know, once every 3 mm-hmm. years, you'll have a red Vine dream. It's like, that's fucked up. But,
well, Beverly says something about him having nightmares since he was a baby. And I wonder if they're related.
So is this stretch back? Right. Does it stretch back that far? Are they connected?
Yeah, that's my guess at the moment. But I really, maybe this is leftover Borg shit, right? Like, they forgot to take the implants out of Picard 100%, and somehow some Borg leaked into it.
His sperm are still 50% machine? Is that what you're suggesting? Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. And so Jack Crusher is like half Borg.
He's like a quarter Borg, I think, at that core. If his dad's one half Borg, and his mom's 100% human, he'd be a quarter Borg.
I got
Borg.
My math wrong. Yes, 25%
Borg. Get your
Punnett
square out.
This is what it looks like when you're 25% Borg. Ask Seven.
All
she'll
right.
know.
All right, yeah.
Anyway, they get a second to breathe, and Picard, Riker, Seven, and Shaw discuss the pertinent questions about what just happened, such as how did a changeling get aboard, and what did they tell Starfleet about commandeering their ship? Riker turns command back over to Shaw, who says he already contacted Starfleet, they're on their way. He reinstates Seven so she can face court-martialing. Being instated, then leaves them alone to get their story straight. Picard wants to take responsibility, cover for his friends. And he tells
Beverly
and Jack
to
go home.
No one jumps in to be like, oh, Jean-Luc, we can't let you do that. It's just, he's like, I will bear the brunt. I was solely responsible. And Riker and everybody's like, yeah, damn right. You know, we're only here because you came. Goddamn.
Yeah, pretty much.
Usually people are like, no, we can't let you. They're just, nope, yep, that sounds about right. Does this explain why changelings look like meat wads now? That this is a new evolution of changelings, that it's not like, because like when Beverly, what does she call it, extreme dissects them, eventually they fall apart into the recognizable kind of reddish, you know, more recognizable reddish Dominion fluid, founder fluid.
Like a thin blob material.
Yeah, like they are. Blob. This is supposed to suggest meat and gristle and bone material, that they're not, yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense.
She says it's not an evolution, though, that it's like, or does she say it's an evolution?
I think she says it's an evolution. They said that, is it a different species? And
right,
I think
she says no.
It's evolution, whatever that means.
Okay. Yeah. At some point, they're unrecognizable as changelings, I would say, but And yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I really want to talk about this stuff when we get to the autopsy scenes, which are coming up here in a bit.
Yeah. I also really like the delight that Shaw is taking in bringing these people to justice. Like, he
is just so happy
that Starfleet's going to come and rub these guys' nose into the non-existent carpet on the deck. I just love it. And how Gleef is like, yeah, would you like to face the music? Reinstated or uninstated? She's like, reinstated. He's like, all right, have your... He's good. He's great. It's great.
And they set up... something that is a retcon that makes a lot of sense, though, that every crew member now passes through an internal imaging chamber before reporting for their post on Starfleet, which is standard protocol since the Dominion War. Makes sense.
You would think that just transporting someone would do that.
Totally. And that's why I was like super suspicious of Ro later, because she didn't want to transport over.
Everything in this
fucking
episode is wanting you to suspect maximum Ro coming back on. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
And that worked pretty well for me. I was on board.
Yeah, they did
that.
Construct that pretty well. Like, just as like she's doing the blood test, you go back to Beverly and being like, yo, the blood test won't work. And, you know, it adds a little bit of a pressure cooker situation to Picard. Yeah, that wasn't the problem in the episode for sure.
Yeah, it did surprise me a little when Beverly was like, I want to go examine the changeling's body. I'm like, how do you examine a changeling's body? Bashir had access to one for damn near a decade and never learned a thing about it. Like, good luck.
And
but
he was
a
genetically engineered super genius, Beverly. I love you, but come on.
Right, your medicine's 20 years out of date, lady.
Yeah.
But this worked because it is different, right? This is something that's easily observable, even to the naked human eye. So
yes.
And then he says, Picard says, hey, I want Beverly and Jack to go home. Beverly wants to examine the body, though. Picard tries to talk Jack into joining Starfleet, but Jack turns him down, which makes sense. Like, I don't want to ruin my life the way you did, old man. Like, the reason I'm here and pissed off at you is because you were a Starfleet junkie and never had time for your son. Like, why would I want to follow that path?
Yeah, it makes Picard seem like an Amway salesman. Like, he's just always always selling Starfleet, you know?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you got a problem there? Have you tried Starfleet? Oh, if a little, finding a loss of lack of direction in your life, try Starfleet.
Right.
Yeah.
Or at least it makes him seem a little oblivious, like suggesting to this kid,
after all this particular kid, right? Right.
Silly.
The swords and clashing sounds of battle they play in Jack's head when he's at the end of his conversation just makes him seem truly unhinged.
Okay, I thought that was part of the next scene, but...
Oh my god!
Which is Worf.
Oh my god, you're right! my god!
They let in with some sound, but it
works.
Right,
the very next scene is them... Why? So why did they do that? I think it's both. I think Jack's brain was, what do they call that? When the music's coming from inside the scene,
he's providing diegetic.
He's providing a diegetic sound for the next scene because he's just all swords and bloodshed in his brain. Uh-huh. No, you're right. Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah, let's get to that. Raffi and Worf train together, and they get a message from Worf's Starfleet handler. It says Worf has been denied access to investigate Daystrom, but also to continue investigating. So they decide to question someone who knew Sneed and might also know how the changelings got into Daystrom. His name is Kryn, and he's the kingpin of some crime syndicate.
I love the Klingon Empire music that they play during their sword fight, too. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anytime we get Klingon music,
it's good stuff. I also love when he does the Neo thing where, like, Raffi's doing an all-out assault on him, and he's just, like with a bored look on his face, blocking it one-handed with, like, very minimal motion. It's like he's just, like, handing her ass here.
He's doing it with a Batleth, right?
I think it's that Kotleth, the new sword that they designed for him.
Gotcha.
It's like an asymmetric Batleth. Do you know why he drops to his knees? Was he anticipating his handler calling? Like, you know, like, he abandons the battle, drops his knees and strikes a meditation pose. And yeah. Rafi's like, what the fuck? And like 3 seconds later, a call comes in.
I don't know. I don't know exactly what they're doing with that. I mean, I know they're making it very new agey, but like.
Right. But why would you? There's a couple times I've seen that work where like a really memorable example is in the first season of Game of Thrones, when the Hound and the Mountain are getting into a scuffle and, you know, Bobby Baratheon stands up, says, in the name of your king, halt. And like instantly the Hound takes the knee, which lets him duck this like decapitation stroke his brother's stringing at him. That was really fucking slick. And it felt like they were going for something like this. But, you know, like, why? Like, is he like the Vader before the Empire? Like, when he gets a call from Ro, he takes a knee and's like, master, you know, like, what? Sifu Ro, what is going on? It didn't make sense in the context. If you have any ideas what the fuck he's doing, Picard at baldmove.com.
Yeah. So let's go over to the next scene with them where they go to District 6. Apparently, they're now feared because of killing Sneed. Rafi announces
a room full of people.
Yes, in front of everybody. Rafi
with
announces
a sword, which must seem like insane in the 21st century. Some dude came in screaming with a sword and murdered a bunch of people. That sure. I mean, what is the equivalent? Like someone coming in with like a stone axe,
or like in a suit of armor, in a full plate armor thing.
I don't even feel like even that's not anachronistic enough. Like, you know, swords, like, that's kind of crazy, but people do get killed with swords occasionally. It has to be something like very, like a primitive Neolithic spear. Like, oh my God, what did he get stabbed with? A piece of flint? What the fuck?
Crushes somebody with a stone wheel. I don't know.
It's just clubbing someone to death with a broken branch. It's something really primitive and primal.
Rafi announces to the entire world that they're looking for Kryn. Worf kneels and waits for the ecology of District 6 to right itself. And here I'm like, oh boy, have they taken Worf to new agey? What's your feeling on that?
And here's with the kneeling meditation, and I just don't know how it connects to the previous scene. Like, does Worf, anytime he gets to where he doesn't know what to do next, either in beating up his student or waiting for the ecology of an underworld, he just pops a knee and starts meditating?
I guess so. Yeah.
Maybe it's just Michael Dorn showing off that at 70, he can still get on and off his knees. No problem. He's a fucking athlete. Okay.
How old he is? Wow.
I looked it up. He's 7 years old and he moves well. Like, I was like, he gets on his knees and crucially back off those knees in a flash. Mm-hmm. And it's him. I don't think it's a stunt person.
No, it seems like it's him. He's moves better than I will at 70. I can tell you that.
I can promise you that.
So let's go back over to the USS Intrepid arriving where the Titan is. The security officer insists they board the Titan via shuttle, which is very suspicious when you're dealing with changelings. Picard tells Seven he might need another favor, and then Shaw revels in the prospect of seeing Riker and Picard punished. I'm going to stop there for a second because I really love it. He's wrong. The Shaw is biased. Look, I saw Star Trek Generations. I saw Star Trek Insurrection. I saw All Good Things. And I feel like, with maybe the exception of All Good Things, none of these were the Enterprise or Picard and Riker's fault. Like, Picard did not break the Prime Directive in Star Trek Insurrection. Starfleet was doing something horrible. The civilization that was there, the Baku, did not qualify for Prime Directive because they were a warp-faring civilization already. They got to that planet by traveling there via warp from another star system. So that is not a Prime Directive violation in my mind.
Yeah. No, they do. I mean, it is this one. It's kind of like what they played around with in the Marvel timeline, that like you have these people doing great things and you have these awesome battles in these cities where things are blowing up, and then the next movie's like, you killed how many people? Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that these people have been the center of saving the universe so many times, or the galaxy, I guess, implies that they've also been in the thick of a lot of shit. And I actually like this every once in a while, where someone from outside the hero's perspective kind of like reformulates, like, you know, not just that you guys, yeah, you saved everybody in justified means maybe, but oh my God, so many people die on the Enterprise.
Yeah, I love the line, you know, when it comes to saving the solar system or whatever, you have a real chicken and egg thing happening. That's pretty good. It's so great.
I mean, yeah, I mean, how many times have you seen people in red or gold shirts on the Enterprise D just suddenly grab their head and start screaming because some nebula baby's imploding their guts, or, you know, Q's decided he wants to teach humanity another lesson about getting too big for the britches, or horrifying cyborg zombies invade and want to absorb your tech. Like, it just happens all the time. It's a dangerous post.
That's the thing. And I think Shaw has a moment of realization later where he understands that, like, this shit just finds Picard, right? It's not like he goes out there and searches for what's the next dangerous adventure I can go on.
Although,
how can I ride the edge of violating the Prime Directive? He never goes out and actually looks for that stuff, but it comes to him because he's out there. He's out there exploring, right? Like,
that's
out there on the edge of the fucking Romulan territory in the neutral zone. Like, shit's going to happen out there, man.
I think he gets it by the end. And they definitely cast Shaw as a guy who, because of his experiences as a young person in Starfleet, is extremely risk averse. Like,
totally.
I don't want to go gallivant where I'm not supposed to go. I don't want to meet an omnipotent interdimensional being that's going to throw me to those aforementioned cyborg space zombies. I just want to do my parade for Frontiers Day, get my crew home safe, get my ship back in the port with all of its parts intact, and, you know, do that until I retire. And that's just not Picard and Riker.
Oh, definitely not. I think earlier in the season, he did call the Titan an exploration ship, which kind of surprises me that you'd put a guy like Shaw on an exploration ship. I don't know.
Aren't all Federation vessels technically exploration vehicles? Like,
sure, that's what they call them, even though they're heavily armed.
Starfleet's not supposed to be a military organization, even though it totally is, but...
Right.
Hey, some are right purely research vessels. They don't even have armaments or stuff, but, like, yeah. I don't know. You can't call something the Titan and in good faith say it's an exploration vessel. The Intrepid, the Indomitable, the Indestructible... The Federation's cock bigger than yours. Like, it's you can't do that and not say that you're not inviting a challenge,
right?
The USS Enterprise 1701 Big D. Yeah, they just can't do that. Come on.
So the security officer arrives on the Titan, and turns out it's Ro Lauren. She says they're going to be questioned and might be charged with treason.
My notes say Ro motherfucking Lauren. I was really pleased to see her show up. One of my how many recurring characters were there? I'd say she's one of my favorites, but, like, there's only a handful. You've got, like, the Vashas, you got the Ro Laurens, you've got the Broccolis, you've got
Leah Brahms.
Who else we got? Leah Brahms two episodes, yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anyone that showed up that didn't, like Pulaski.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Pulaski's side character, not a fan. Everybody else, I kind of took a shine to. But, yeah, I always liked... did you know that Ro Laurens was supposed to be Kira Nerys in Deep Space Nine? But for whatever reason, they couldn't get a contract with her, so they invented essentially a Michelle Forbes-type character and gave it to Nana Visitor. Nana Visitor?
I really like Nana Visitor. I don't know how to say her first name. But yeah, I really like her, so I'm kind of glad that didn't happen. But also, I wonder what Michelle Forbes could have done.
It would have been
interesting
to see the two commanders, essentially co-commanders at Deep Space Nine, both with personal issues with Picard. I thought that would have been something interesting. And like I said, I really like Ro Lauren. I really like Michelle Forbes. She's been in she's been a lot of Star Trek, actually. She's shown up time and time again. But yeah, I guess we'll never know, because you're right. I do like the Keira Nerys approach.
Oh yeah, she's great. I will say another recurring character is Majel Barrett. She shows up all the time as Lwaxana.
True.
Always a highlight.
True.
I wouldn't mind seeing her back. Is she still alive? I don't even know.
No, she died. She died a couple years back.
That's unfortunate. But
yeah.
Yeah, she's great. All right, let's go over to Seven hiding Jack Crusher. She gives him an outfit to wear, which is a Starfleet uniform. Jack doesn't want to wear it. And that's kind of that scene. I don't have anything to say. I'm itching to talk about this autopsy.
Let's keep moving then.
All right, Beverly does an autopsy on the changeling. It turns out the changeling has some biological features that might allow it to pass Starfleet screenings. Namely, it bleeds and it doesn't turn back to a liquid state when it dies.
I did enjoy Crusher's clinical, like asking Lieutenant LaForge or Ensign LaForge to verify that this is not in fact her body, and she just vomits. He's like, let the record show that Ensign LaForge has positively identified this is not her body.
Mm-hmm. This has some serious implications, I guess.
But is there like a more a thorough, because like, again, this seems silly, right? But in the context of this show, where like I've seen each of the bridge crew being taken over by some organism or replaced with clones, mm-hmm. or whatever, like at least five times, there's got to be a better way to verify that the right crew member died than saying to the living crew member, this is not you, right? Like, yeah. They're telling me that this is indistinguishable from the real Ensign LaForge. So how do you know? What if it's just the greatest changeling character actor of all time that was had a detailed briefing of LaForge's sure. career and life and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of questions. Like, how does it get you... by looking at you, how does it reproduce you down to the genetic level? To where a scan of your body, to where you could be transported. Yeah, literally read into a buffer of a transporter and not detected as a changeling.
I'm guessing that as a way to sample the DNA, like little taste, like, oh, it's
all right, yeah.
It's the bouquet of the DNA, you know, like a sommelier. Uh-huh. Just knows.
It sticks its proboscis down into the flower, way down in there. Takes a little sample.
Right. Gets the nectar.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Sure.
More of a pseudopod than a proboscis when we're talking changelings, but sure.
Uh huh. I don't know. It also, let me say this. Does why evolve it like this? So why retcon, hey, we all go through scans now to make sure we're not changelings after the Dominion War before we get our post, only to then retcon again, or not retcon, but to change that again and evolve that to where, oh, actually those detection things can't actually detect anything anymore because these things have evolved, when in Deep Space Nine they never came up with a way to like determine, hey, this is a changeling versus this is the real person. Why not just leave it in that state?
They did have the blood test, right? Like, if you, like, you know, they could sample your blood, and if it turned into changeling in the chamber, then they'd had you. But there was a surprising amount of ways that the changelings could get around that. I remember one episode, a changeling kept a vial of its subject's blood within its body, kind of like suspended in the ooze. And whenever someone wanted to take the test, it would, like, you know,
shift it over there.
Shift it to where it's close, and they take that sample. Also, I think there's one memorable case where Bashir, of course, is the doctor, was the one administering all the tests, and they just replaced Bashir.
That's easy.
You've got garbage in, garbage out. I kind of thought the same way. It's like, wow, they already had the test that's going to be a part. Like, why did they invent all this other? But I guess it's just kind of like to make Starfleet seem like they're not complete idiots. You know, like, hey, we actually had this whole system to make sure this thing that happened to us can't happen again. And, oh, this is why it's not. There's a new wrinkle. So I guess that's fine.
It evolves.
But like the blood test was all they needed, you know, like, oh, they can't do the blood test anymore.
Yeah. Red alert! Here comes an ad break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to the podcast maneuver.
We go over to Picard, who's pissed that Ro'Laren is back in Starfleet. He doesn't believe it should be impartial based on their history. Then Ro shows up in the room, dismisses Riker so she can question Picard. And he immediately starts attacking her verbally. She takes it to mean that he thinks she's a changeling, so she slices her hand to prove she has blood, which... as we know, watching Beverly, that proves
just
nothing.
Just made me suspect her more.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Where's your fucking earring too, lady? I know how important that shit is to you.
And then she turns the conversation over to his son, Jack. I was doing the same. I'm like, man, the way they are structuring this episode is very good because it has me... the fact that she's trying to prove that she's not a changeling makes me more suspicious of her, just like you said.
I think Picard was ranting and raving about Ro'Laren more than was quite necessary.
More than is justified by their history, I think, but...
I mean, they definitely played that as if it was a betrayal, he trusted her and gave her all the special training and, she used that against the Federation. You know, she joined the Maquis, which... Like I said, I don't know if I'd be a Maquis joiner, but like I definitely think they had a point, right?
I'm sympathetic to them, yes.
I'm sympathetic to their cause. They're not insane people. They're
and
not
after
people
seeing
without honor either.
Another character who was deep into that as well, into that fighting with Kira Nerys and really sympathizing with her and liking her, I'm even less opposed to it, right?
Right. And Picard liked for this to be like, even Riker points out, like, this is 30 years ago. Why are you so fucking and I don't think the episode has an answer. Like, I just wish they'd played Picard like more coolly in charge, like knowing that they have a history and using that to again, you know, the fact that they had this mentor mentee and that she's aware that he's this, like, use that rather than just be this openly antagonistic asshole who's just literally ranting and raving. Like, we start the scene with him just in full, like, I don't know, man.
Because Picard can get like this from time to time. He's certainly no stranger to.
But he rebelled against the Federation for almost the exact same thing in a fucking movie.
That's true.
Suddenly you're going to go against the Federation when you don't agree with their fucking relocation policies?
Yeah, insurrection, sure.
Especially when, like, I don't remember exactly all the specifics of that, but, like, this wasn't like a death march of baton. This was like they were going to be herded. They're going to, without their knowledge, be put aboard a hollow vessel. To take their primitive to some other planet that is indistinguishable from their home world. They would essentially never even know they got moved.
Until they started aging and dying.
Well, yeah, there's that. But like Picard is like all up again.
You're effectively killing them. So that was the problem I had.
So was abandoning Federation colonists to the Cardassians is effectively killing them.
Sure.
We saw when Wesley turned into a traveler, we got to see exactly what's going to be butchery, savagery.
Oh, yeah. I'm very sympathetic to the Bajoran cause, whether or not I believe in the Maquis' like tactics.
Especially since, if I recall correctly, the first planet where the Ba'ki War actually began was a settlement of Native Americans who had been looking for a home ever since the like 19th century when they're kicked off where they what settled the 10,000 years. Yeah, it was a planet of Native Americans. Like, oh my God, we finally found some place where no one will fuck with us, and the Federation sells it to Cardassians, and they get ran off to let. It's like you. So really, Picard can't see any daylight between a reasonable position. Yeah, no, it seems insane.
Yeah. Yeah, Picard is on one here.
He is on one.
And yes. He will be for the rest of the episode, too. We rehash this several times where they like dance around it a little bit and then get distracted. And they dance around it some more, get distracted.
When they shut off Data's like memory program in the first season, did he get his emotion chip, too? Does that, you know, it's like, yeah. Hey, you're a positronic android now. You're going to want one of these. Flip up his fingernail, plug it in. Suddenly, he's just like 17-year-old. Hormonal.
He's got double the emotions that he should have.
Great. Double the emotions, double the dumbass is what I say.
All right, Jack hears more voices telling him to connect us. I don't know, there's some weird stuff going on. He goes to the transporter room and sees another tentacle vision. He asks the transporter operator to send him anywhere other than a Starfleet ship and shoots him when he refuses. Of course, it's all still part of the vision. And then he runs away. I don't know how I feel about all these visions, man. This stuff is like, how many times are you going to do this? How many times are you going to show me something happening and then take that away? Take it back.
Yeah.
We don't mean it.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot. Was I wrong to root for Jack to shoot this transporter chief in the face? Because I feel like every time a transporter chief goes down, we're this much closer to getting Miles O'Brien back working the three switches.
Only so many transporter chiefs in Starfleet. It's true.
That's right.
And apparently it takes a high level of skill to operate those three sliders.
You do. You got the treble, the bass, and the mid-range. You don't want, sure. If you get any of those wrong, it's all, your track won't come out right.
It's weight, height, and demeanor, I guess. Those are the sliders. And if you mix one a little too high... You're
no,
come back
it's
with Tom
it's height, weight, and gender presentation, and that shit gets really tricky. You gotta get it dialed in just right. That's right. It's most transporter chiefs don't age out or die; they get canceled. So
Jesus, it's true.
Miles always gets that shit right. Impeccable.
Mm-hmm. Is there a bar for washed up transporter chiefs out there?
It's the third, called the third slider. The final slider. You slid into this bar stool and you're here for the rest of your life.
I love it. That's the holodeck program I want to see. Where were we? Oh yeah, the visions and stuff. Let's go over to Rafi and Worf again. Kryn shows up. He shoots Rafi, but she was a hologram, so it doesn't matter. She planned on covering Worf with the rifle.
Even if it was real Rafi,
still
nobody's putting a letter campaign to Paramount to save Rafi. Yeah.
Not her husband, not her son, not her granddaughter.
Especially not her son.
Nope.
Oh, thank God, I've been called to peace.
So she planned on covering Worf with a rifle from the rooftop, but she gets captured too. That's kind of where
the look on her face when she gets like, it's so fucking funny. I can't even tell you what the emotion is, but it's not the right one for the situation.
So this is like one of those plans that is so precisely calculated that it seems impossible to go off the way they want it to. I always hate this. It always feels artificial. Like, I know that we're going to go into this situation. I'm going to have a hologram of Rafi. He's going to shoot Rafi. He's going to take us into custody. He's going to make us fight with knives. I'm going to pretend to be dead, and then I'm going to pop up and get him. That is the plan here. Everything has to go precisely how they expect it to go in order for this plan to work. There is no wiggle room. If he shoots Worf instead of Rafi, it's game over. If he doesn't make them fight with knives, if he just shoots, if he makes them swim with sharks or something, it's over. Like, there's,
yeah.
I don't like these plans. I really don't.
I think it works because the Vulcan has agency and he's the one deciding who to shoot. He knows that Rafi, he didn't shoot Rafi just to shoot her. He knew that Rafi was a holo and he's trying to stop Worf's shit of being, we've got the upper hand here. And he's like, no, you don't. You're trying to get in a battle of wits with a fucking Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
No way. Like, maybe your best and your brightest, but like, you're a 7-year-old Klingon and she's half snake leaf muddled and you're just not going to outthink me. Okay.
Well, this is a particularly dumb Vulcan. They make it a point. You know, he's joined up with the crime syndicate. He thinks there can be no utopia without crime.
Well, that's true.
This is kind of a dumbass Vulcan.
Did you notice this, the pendant he was wearing? This is a deep Star Trek cut. He's wearing this pendant that's a symbol for the Vulcan philosophy of infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Huh.
It's a sphere with a triangle overlaid it. And this showed up in the old series, I think in season 3 of Star Trek, and just out of nowhere, like, Spock's got this, he's rocking this necklace and he's talking about how it's his Roddenberry came up with this to sell merch. And it actually pissed off Leonard Nimoy. He's like, you're betraying the artistic integrity of this series by trying to hawk this stupid shit and trying to get, like, you know.
And Roddenberry said, you want a fucking paycheck or not?
And he's like, did you not just see that we got canceled last season? I'm trying to make this fucking show work, okay? So this has kind of been this, like, this shameful thing in Star Trek history, and it comes up every once and again as, like, a really deep cut. And I like that this gangster Vulcan is completely rocking the Vulcan infinite diversity, infinite combination symbol.
Yeah, diversity like utopia and criminals. Those are diverse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, the thing is like, you can make it to mean anything. Like, if it's something bad's happening, infinite diversity, infinite, something really amazing, infinite diversity, infinite combinations. Like, essentially anything can happen.
What's a C'est la vie sort of thing?
It was supposed to be like the Vulcans, like, it's that... I think the idea is, like, from all of these disparate things, you can achieve a harmonious blend of truth.
Okay.
Like, there's all this random shit happening in the galaxy, but through care, study, and logic, you can make sense of it, you know? But also, I think it's also could be Murphy's, like, you could easily turn that around to be the Vulcan's Murphy's Law.
Sure.
If something can go wrong, I will go wrong, except, you know, if you're having a good time, bad times are going to come, et cetera.
If you want a utopia, you got to have crime.
If you want a utopia, you got to have a little crime. Because how would you even know you were in a utopia?
Right? You couldn't recognize it as such. That's the thing that pisses me off about that line.
Right.
You don't have to recognize you're in something in order to be in something, right?
Right, right, right.
Yeah, so I don't know. Kind of annoyed me here, but whatever. It's fine. Let's go back over to Beverly continuing her autopsy. The changelings have apparently evolved and could be anyone, anywhere, and they'd never know. This is the scene where she cuts the goo into microscopic bits and it reverts.
She uses this term. She says, only under intense dissection does it revert back to its original state. I don't think that's a medical term. Intensive dissection. What the fuck does intensive dissection mean?
Like, diced compared to chopped, I guess.
But like dissecting is just taking things apart, right? You know? Uh-huh. So like intensive, I don't understand. It's like unless you're just like cutting things to cut things, like you're just cutting a steak. That's intensive dissection, I suppose. But I just thought it was really funny. Under intensive dissection.
I also love the idea that intensive dissection in Beverly's mind is to just cut something into a small piece with a knife.
Right.
They have machines that can break it down to its subatomic particles.
Sure.
And examine it.
Put that thing,
but that's not an intense dissection. It's can we dice this thing? Yeah.
Do you not have a medical transporter? You can you literally break this down into subatomic particles and reassemble it.
You can
into
tell
whatever
me how many fucking electrons are in that thing, but somehow cutting it into small pieces is the thing.
I always thought that was wild that, like, the medical, like, Beverly in the Enterprise has a sick bay that has a hot, like, a med bay scanner that's somehow more advanced than the transporter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's some sort of imaging process that can tell you more about the internal pathology of something than literally taking it apart at the quark level. The quark and gluon level.
Maybe it just records more properties about a thing, right? You don't, like, I don't need to know what Lego is made of in order to disassemble and reassemble Lego. But maybe her machine can tell you it's this type of plastic and it was manufactured in this year and, like, that kind of thing.
It's like the transport is too much data. It's like you can't see the forest for the trees type of deal.
The medical version of it is telling you all that extra data, whereas the transporter regular, which is called transporter light, just needs to know, how do I put this thing back together after I've disassembled it?
All right.
It's my guess.
I'm unpersuaded, but all right.
All right. Ro continues interrogating Picard. Beverly sends him a message with the discovery she's made about changeling evolution and to trust no one. Picard tests Ro by asking her how she got back into Starfleet. She tells him the story and then demands to see the remains of the changeling they killed. You want to talk about this before we go to the holodeck scene?
No, I mean, they're just essentially banging home that this woman's probably a changeling. We've kind of already talked about, like, I just don't find Picard's side of this conversation persuasive, knowing what I know about Picard and what he's gotten up to. And, like, the fact he's had 30 years to think about it, the fact that he had, you know, it's one thing to say in the moment that it's immoral to leave the Federation and join the Maquis. 30 years later, you know... Like, mm-hmm. I like, surely there's, like, some kind of, like, moral consensus on this. Like, was the Maquis a doomed but noble and, because, like, my recollection is the Maquis stuff all kind of, like, got dropped because the Dominion came and, like, everything else is small potatoes.
Sure.
Like, makes everyone sense. In the Alpha Quadrant had to band together, Cardassians included. Or were they? Were the Cardassians collaborators?
Yeah. I want to say they might have been both. I can't remember exactly.
They started off and then they switched sides when...
I think so, but it's been a while. Mm. I'm in, like, season 2 of a Deep Space Nine rewatch, so I'll know like here a bit.
I thought Picard was boorish and rude. I thought Rolaren was awesome and well-spoken. You know, like, she's correct every single time that Picard is talking about personal honor. He was conflating it with the essentially honor and reputation of Starfleet, which is
totally,
you know, especially if you just all Rolaren's a Bajoran.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
do you expect them not to fight back against their, like, oppressors?
I understand that Picard was disappointed when Worf left his commission to go fight in the Klingon Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
But where was all the condemnation and high dudgeon when that happened? You know, like, Worf was allowed to go again, fight in the Klingon Civil War, lead battle cruisers against brother versus brother, battle cruiser versus battle cruiser. He comes back and he's like, yeah, I'm ready to come back. And I think Picard gave him some shit about it. But, like, yeah, she's a Bajoran. Of course she's going to side against the Cardassians when they're brutalizing her people.
He hasn't been thinking about Worf leaving for 30 years, right? And rehearsing conversations about what to say to him, how to really get him.
I guess, yeah. The fact that he's rehearsed his conversation for 30 years, including memorizing in Bajoran, apparently. It's just really funny to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're on their way to sickbay, but Ro detours Picard into the holodeck at gunpoint. Picard manages to, and this never amounts to anything. I don't even know why it's in here. Picard manages to discreetly turn off the safety protocols in the holodeck and puts a phaser on Ro. I love that there's just a button always present and labeled as such to disable safety protocols in the holodeck. Like, what purpose? I've seen people do it, and it's usually they say, computer, disable safety protocols.
Right.
They say it. They don't have a button somewhere under the bar that's, I don't know.
And why are you allowed to do that? Like, I can understand if the captain could be allowed or, like, select, but, like, Worf,
sure,
as a junior lieutenant
override.
In season one, goes in there and turns him off just to, like, fucking throw around a bunch of He-Man monsters.
Feel alive,
because,
yeah.
Yeah, just to feel alive. Like, shouldn't that raise a... Shouldn't that have mandatory... Like, Deanna Troi's waiting for him outside. Like, Worf, notice you have some aggression lately. You've been recreationally snapping necks in an environment to get you killed. Can we talk about that? You know,
like it's just part of my culture. Yeah.
It's part of, yeah. Well, okay. I got to back off on that. But,
Anyway, they talk about their long,
really
history.
All Klingons are just violent assholes. Isn't that even more racist than me not respecting your culture to assume that Klingons are just biologically beholden to their drives and like it can't something they can't overcome? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you got me there. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's there's a lot of black and white sort of stuff, pun intended, that it happens.
Sometimes
in
the old series, literally black and white. In case you missed the metaphor.
Mm-hmm. So they talk about their history long enough to prove that neither of them is a changeling, and then Ro reveals why she's really here to tell Picard that Starfleet is compromised at the highest level. I really thought when they stepped into this holodeck that it was Moriarty time.
Oh yeah,
I'm waiting. I wonder, I'm like, how do they get him back in here? This is an opportunity, but nope.
I wonder if they're going to leave the safety locks off this whole time, and Moriarty's going somehow.
No. This is yep.
It's an unintended consequences.
Oh, you're right. Because why else turn them off here? It amounts to nothing.
Yeah, I also
he never says. That's a hilarious thing to me. Is he pulls a phaser. A holo phaser on Ro and never tells her that the safety protocols are off. She just assumes that this phaser is going to do something.
That's true. Why wouldn't she think? But she's got a gun on him too. Uh-huh. Why would she take him to the holodeck where this is the one place where you like you? I believe in the holodeck with the safety protocols on, she could discharge that phaser right in Picard's face and nothing would happen.
Right. What? What is going on there?
I don't know.
So she assumes that he turned the safety protocols off?
I think it's because they asked the previz department to come up with a whole bunch of sick Lycar shit for the end credits, and someone threw in a holodeck with 10 forward with the safeties turned off, and they're like, ah,
there
it's
you
now
go.
Or never, baby. It's now or never. No, yeah. It's got, because like the thing is yeah, we got to get LaForge still to go. We haven't gotten Moriarty. There's a lot, like, it's more, like, we're going to be hip deep in this fucking, changeling arc, and Lore and Moriarty are going to show up. Surely they get an episode each, so there's three other episodes where they can actually deal with this. It's insane storytelling. Speaking of insane storytelling, did you think that they're going to pop a romantic angle between Ro and Picard here? Because the way they were about their close relationship and how heartbroken they were and how you were my older male mentor and that you were my young protege, I was like, I did never in a second got that there was anything between Ro and Picard. But I don't think they got there. But man, the dialogue they were spitting had me thinking that they were going there.
Sure, I suppose. It didn't really cross my mind. And that's one of the things I like about Star Trek is you don't have to have, you know, these very attractive people having romantic entanglements all the time. You can have a very intimate, but a very, like, platonic relationship between characters who, you know, other shows might try and pair off, right?
Well, then also,
I was actually thinking about it the other day.
Like Riker and Deanna, many times that was part of the plot. Like, someone would come in and be like, oh, you're going to be jealous? And Riker's like, absolutely not. I love Deanna. I want the best. If you can make her happy, go for it. And her felt the same way about him.
Right.
Like,
not
modeling
ideal.
Mature adult behavior, right?
Right, right. So I love that Star Trek. But who knows if that would happen here. But I'm glad they don't go down that route. Because, yeah, it seems like they went down the animosity route instead. Just Picard's still offended that he... got betrayed 30 years later. She claims that Picard always mistook morality for duty. I have a hard time squaring that circle. I've always seen Picard as a man who is driven by a deep sense of morality and breaks code all the time. I mean, if you want in the span of a single episode for Shaw to make a point about violating the Prime Directive in order to save a bunch of people in insurrection from being transported off their home planet and effectively sentenced to death, you can't then make the point that Picard mistakes morality for duty all the time.
Right.
Because those two things are mutually exclusive, or they're not mutually exclusive, but he can do them at different times, but they're not always the way he operates. And I've seen him time and time again say, well, this is not the right thing to do, and so we're not going to do it. Or the right thing is to do this, so we're going to do it. Regulations be damned. Picard's a guy who's deeply driven by morality.
Yeah, it's the way, it's like the way people debate shit online. Like, did someone do something one time that you personally don't like? Well, then they're fucking, that's just what they do. And if someone does stuff all the time that you kind of like or want to excuse, well, then that's not a big problem. It's just like, you know, like taken into his totality, Picard is nothing like what Shaw or Roe is trying to paint him as. But like this show is fine. Like it feels like Picard's defensive about it. Like, oh God, you're hitting me too close to the mark. I'm like, Picard, he's too fucking old and too self-possessed to be like getting angry at these kind of attacks.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the way he handled Shaw. Like, he's like, he doesn't have to defend himself. He doesn't have to defend himself from the locutus libel.
Exactly.
Like, you know, he spent his whole life living that shit down. And better people than Shaw have pointed and thrown it into his face, right? Mm-hmm. But here, Robot, it's like, again, it's like they have a special bond just based on the you and I of everything. It's just, I just thought it was really weird.
Yeah, I mean, their history is such that I would buy some kind of bond, but...
Well, and that's the thing, I've never
seen... I feel like they're fundamentally miscategorizing Picard in these scenes.
It's wild to me that you have this writing room that clearly has a lot of deep affection for Star Trek and appreciation for its lore, and yet cannot get its hands around the whole thing.
Sure.
Or maybe they just see that as a feature. They can just cherry pick and, you know, anyone can be anything depending on, you know, you get the right episode to showcase it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when they do things like this, I expect them to be making a point that Shaw is wrong or a point that Roe is wrong. But I don't feel like they're actually trying to get there. I feel like they have an idea of a large theme that they want to go for, which is kind of, I don't know, Picard is questioning his own life and his own motivations, and these people coming to him and saying, pointing to specific instances and saying, blah, 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 you did this wrong, is kind of feeding into that. But it doesn't quite feel right to me. I don't know. Anyway, we talked about Starfleet being compromised again. It was the Romulans before, now it's changelings. This is always happening.
Starfleet, have you ever tried not compromising? It might be the way to go. It might be the play.
Could be.
Not compromising. Not being compromised.
I guess I like the end of this scene where Picard is asked to trust someone who's betrayed him, right? I mean, that's the one thing that stands that definitely is true, is she betrayed Picard.
Yeah.
In Starfleet, with her actions way back when. So I think it's kind of interesting to say, do you trust me? And Picard has to think about it for a second and say yes, finally.
I think it'd be interesting if they dwelled a little bit on why she came back to Starfleet, too. She, like, came back to Starfleet after, I guess, the whole Maquis thing. That's very murky, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you left and you joined a terrorist organization, and you came. He's like, they did the how and what, but they didn't do the why. Like, did you have a change of heart? Do you no longer agree with the Maquis? Were you, you know, did you decide that the Dominion was a greater threat? Like, what brought you back into the fold? They never really answered that. It's just how I got back into the fold.
Uh-huh. You're right. So Kryn makes Worf and Raffi fight to the death with knives, and Raffi kills Worf? Question mark? This was a non-starter for me. You don't stab Worf in the guts at the hand of Raffi and have him die for all time. This was obviously not how Worf dies.
I just about, like I said, because I was getting, I'm like, oh my God, if Rafi kills Worf forever and ever, I don't know I'll ever get no. over it.
Right, because it's so stupid. I knew, yeah. Well, maybe I have too much faith in this crew, but I knew as soon as it happened, there's no fucking way this is how Worf goes out. This is all a ruse.
Yeah, Rafi's still a recurring character. She's not part of the bridge crew. Like, imagine if Barclay had murdered Riker. You know, and it's like, sure. That's it. He's just like, or if some kind of blob of oil killed Tasha Yar, it would just be an outrage. You could uh-huh, not stand. Uh-huh. So, yeah, I was glad to see he didn't die. But also, he looked like he was dying. So I was briefly concerned when I first watched this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought, you know, again, Michael Dorn is clearly loving this. He's been trying to get a Captain Worf series off the ground for like a decade, and he has clearly came to play. He understands his assignment, and, you know, when he's like, picks up the knife and is like, do not hold back, because I cannot, as he opens up the attack. But also, the thing is, like, we just saw Worf easily defeat Rafi.
Yeah.
In hand-to-hand combat. So, like, our first clue that this isn't for real should have been that. Like, Worf shouldn't. Like, the Vulcan, who doesn't know them like we know, it's like gave a 10-to-1 odds for Worf. So, like, yeah.
Yeah.
But he also says today is a good day to die, which is cool.
It's a
worthy death. Although, dying the war, I don't know. I don't know if Snake Leaf killing you is a worthy death, Worf. No.
All right, Ro thinks everyone's a changeling. She lays out her evidence for a conspiracy. Picard asks what it has to do with Jack, but she has no idea. Picard wants to take it to his friends in Starfleet, and Ro doesn't think it's possible. Apparently, she's been gathering evidence and information, and the changelings are close. She's warning him. Kind of getting to a lot of this later.
But... yeah, like the plot starting to, like, you know, we realize that the two security assets are... Rafi and Worf, and that's kind of cool. Like, I started to get excited at this point. And yeah. this compromising of Starfleet is, she says dozens of Starfleets, multiple incidences. She thinks it's something new to this Frontiers Day because the whole fleet's going to be on display and exposed, but the security procedures are encrypted even from Starfleet intelligence. It's like something bad. Like, we've been told this all season, but something really bad is coming.
Yeah, totally. Let's go back to Kryn, who starts having Worf dragged away. Tells Rafi, you work for me now, threatening her family. Worf's dead body wakes up. And it kills all the Kryn's henchmen, puts a knife to his neck. Apparently, Worf can tank a knife in the guts and meditate until his heart stops. Kryn tells them that he has a device that can get them past Aestrom's security, and it's logical that he give it to them.
I like this. The Vulcan says when Worf picks up the blade to stab Rafi, I say, oh, Klingons rarely disappoint. And when Worf shows up and puts a knife to his, like, Klingons never disappoint. That was great. And his whole, I've mastered the Kaelas technique of regulating my heart. And as he says it, he starts to kind of get woozy because, but also you've lost a lot of blood because Rafi realized stabbed you to pull this off. I guess this is something they worked out, you know.
Oh, so it's all part of the plan, yeah.
How do you work something like that out?
So I'm saying, man, it has to go exactly right in every detail.
This part of it is like, if they may, I kind of was hoping, I thought it'd be more awesome if Rafi had no idea what was going on and Worf is such a skillful warrior that he redirected a non-fatal blow.
It's like
that would be convincing.
Our flag means death. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen that far, but like I thought it'd be even more than her being like, I didn't stab you too deep. That I was like, when did you work this out?
Right.
Is this like Worf being like, now look, this guy's whole thing is he has people. He's seen the Dark Knight too many times. He loves to break a cue stick, throw it down and say, there's only one opening in my criminal. Like, I don't know. This show, that's a sign of a less skillful writing endeavor is when you have to continually keep shit from the audience. Mm-hmm. Because there's no fucking way you can track a plot from A to B to C to D. You just have to go from A to D because really B and C happened off screen right now, right here. So No one can second guess this. No one can be like, does this make sense? So,
yep.
With rare exception.
All right, back to Ro. She gives Picard the Titan and a skeleton crew and leaves him with her Bajoran earring. And there's a nice moment here for Ro as she leaves, you know, with her line, I only did what I thought was best. All the stuff she's saying to Picard here, it hits home. I like it. Because that's what everybody does, right? They do what they think is best.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, like,
how do you fault them for it?
Right. But it's a trite setting because some people don't put a lot of, or it's trite saying because it's all about the level of care that you put into determining what was best and then doing what you thought equals that, right?
Totally.
Because that can literally
excuse anything. It was a sticky situation, and I think that everybody in that situation was doing what they thought was best, and nobody was, like, truly in the wrong, but they were at odds with each other. I mean, that's just the scenario they were put in.
I mean, that's the best you can ever hope for, is that, like, I mean, ultimately, that's how we define justice in the country. Like, if a room full of 12 random people look at your case and be like, that's about right, then you can do almost anything. But if they're like, nah, fuck, that's beyond the pale, or, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt, you're going to fry or whatever. So, like, yeah, but it is, I think it I guess it means something because of what they've built this up in the episode. You know, this whole, like they've both been tortured for 30 years over Picard's misunderstanding of her intentions, which I don't believe. But if I did, I guess this would
be good. Sure. And it kind of goes to the larger theme of this episode and I guess this series in a lot of ways, with what Shaw's saying about, you know, the adventures that Riker and Picard have been on and how dangerous and crazy those seem. Well, Picard's always just doing what he thinks is best. And sometimes it doesn't line up with what Shaw would do.
Set phasers to add. We'll be right back. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make. Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time. Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers. Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited. It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live. Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday. Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy, and strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our 4-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Captain on the bridge, welcome back to the podcast maneuver.
Let's move over to Picard going to the bridge and updating everyone on the situation, telling them they have to run. He implores Shaw to trust him. She's not really inclined to do. That's a kind of a quick scene there. Rose shuttles back to the Intrepid, but her security officers, who turn out to be changelings, transport back onto the Titan, planting a bomb on her shuttle as they go. Ro calls back to the Titan to warn them. They try to transport her out, but there's an inhibitor, presumably in the bomb. She rams the shuttle bomb into the Intrepid, disabling its warp engines. Then the Titan arms torpedoes and orders... The Intrepid arms torpedoes and orders the Titan to surrender.
Picard be like, Ro, I see you, if only now. And she's like, does that disable my bomb? Oh, no? Okay, well, fuck you then. Boom, blows up.
Yeah. I really love the design of the bomb. It's like these futuristic Nixie tubes or something. It's kind of neat. And I assume that's just like changeling numbers, right? This is the language.
I would think so, yeah. It looked very Predator countdown-y, you know?
Totally, yeah.
And then, like, every bomb should come with a transporter inhibitor, because the easiest thing in the world is to beam a bomb off to space, where it can't do any harm. So, like, yeah, you add the inhibitor. Right. It's a little extra money, but...
Why was the go-to move not to beam the bomb off the ship instead of beaming the person off the ship? Because, like... Or do both? You got more than one transporter.
You got to lock on something, and can you lock on an unknown device faster than you can lock on someone's comm badge and life's... I don't know.
Probably not.
I don't know. That's why you need Miles O'Brien. You need Transporter Chief Miles O'Brien in here. Get you a Transporter Chief that can do both. He can save the shuttlecraft. He can save your Starfleet intelligence liaison. He can... He'll
transport in a Arachdegeno as well, if you want one.
Don't care how faint that transporter signal is. He's gonna have it handled.
Uh-huh.
He'll reprogram the computer with a better interface. By the time he leaves, we need Miles O'Brien on this ship.
Does Shaw finally get it in this scene that this shit finds Picard? Picard doesn't go looking for it necessarily. There's a look on his face at the end of this scene that's like, well, goddamn, I thought I was out of this. I thought this was all taken care of, calling in Starfleet, getting them on the case and dealing with this shit. Now it's escalated again. This is just getting out of grasp here.
That he understands what Picard goes through on a daily basis, or is it more of like, because definitely he had the dawning understanding, I guess. I thought the understanding was that this entire time he's looked to kick the can. Like, you know, I'm not going to go on your harebrained adventure. I'm going to confine you to quarters. I'm not going to do this. He's trying to get out the whole time. And he finally thinks, Federation's here. The paddy wagon's here. I'm done with all these fucking people. And it turns out the Federation has been compromised. Starfleet's been compromised. And he's like, I guess we're going to do this. I don't know if he's ready to forgive Picard, because he still probably blames Picard for showing up. But...
oh, yeah, he blames Picard for a lot of stuff, but he should at least appreciate that it doesn't always go according to plan.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, they talk Shaw into running. He orders Red Alert and to leave as soon as Warp is back online. The changelings find Jack in the hall and try and beat him, but he kills them all. Then the Intrepid fires on them, but they manage to warp away just in time.
God, that's the other thing about the Jack of it all, is that they have established that Starfleet in particular, which means the changelings, want Jack. And they've wanted him for months before this stuff has started. Like, I hope they have a really good answer for that. Because just being Jean-Luc's son is not enough. Because Jean-Luc was minding his own goddamn business until you started to get Jack. Like, if you hadn't got Jack, you might have... You know, it's like...
Mm-hmm.
I hope they have a really good answer for why he seems to be the linchpin of these plans. And I don't know. He is some kind of like super agent.
Yeah.
He's got like Jason Bourne activations when he just thinks about red vines hard enough.
No, it's pretty cool. I just have a problem with this from like a meta writing perspective. Like, you introduce the concept of the changelings and they can't be detected easily. And there are now four on the ship, and it's like, holy shit, this is going to be a huge problem for them. But then in the very next scene, Jack just dispatches every single changeling on board.
Yeah.
I'm like, why go to the effort of like creating this scenario where they plant a bomb and they leave the ship, but they don't go back to the Intrepid. They go to the Titan because that's going to be dangerous. And then just kill them? Just kill them all?
Yeah.
What's the point? Why?
I don't know. Five more episodes to explain, I guess.
Yeah. All right, Riker and Picard talk about Ro. Riker shows Picard that her earring has data in it, all the data from her investigation. It also receives a transmission, which is from Worf, and he asks where Ro is. Apparently, Worf knew the identity of his handler. That was surprising to me.
Yeah, I thought that it'd be another text exchange.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, it's like that felt very compartmentalized, like a Starfleet intelligence operation. Like, no one knows who is the level above them, et cetera.
Right.
But it also didn't, you know, Worf is, he's been around the block. Mm-hmm. They have personal dealings with each other. Maybe, like, they figured it out or surmised, or, you know, maybe at the top. Also, he's a contractor, not a Starfleet officer. So maybe you have to be a little bit more full disclosure for him. You can't just order someone to go to this place, you know. I don't know, but I did like the realization of who they're talking to and who he's talking to. That was pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I assume this is how they're gonna get together, right? They're gonna fly to wherever Worf is, pick him up, and they'll all start this search together.
The Titan's gonna be the hub of the investigation into the
mm-hmm.
Which
they have to get Shaw on board at this point, right?
Yeah,
because he's got command again.
I think he is. I mean, that's the thing, is I guess he's on board with running. Will he be on board for anything past that, or will they have to, like, you know, do a mutiny?
Another one?
Another mutiny. Well, I mean, he volunteered. Well, I don't think it's a mutiny. He stepped down, like, you know.
Yeah, and I guess Seven didn't qualify as a mutiny. She didn't try and take over the Titan. She just gave them a shuttle.
Insubordination, fail to follow orders, theft. Yeah, a lot of stuff, but not mutiny. Not mutiny.
The final scene here is Shaw sees the aftermath of Jack killing changelings. Beverly talks to Jack about the nightmares he's been having since he was a baby and encourages him to talk to her. He tells her that he thinks there's something very wrong with him. I would agree.
I agree, man. The sounds of swords and battle ringing in your ears. That's a dead giveaway.
Uh-huh,
That's not healthy behavior, man.
But what it is, I could not tell you. It's as
well.
Wild.
Like, this last line blows up my theory that the red vines are somehow telling him who is infected and who's not, because he says that he killed all four of these without knowing they're changelings. It's like it just kind of happened automatically.
Yeah, which is very much like a Jason Bourne amnesia.
Yeah.
I didn't know I had these skills kind of thing, right?
Yeah, maybe he'll dig a microfish out of his back that will give him galactic coordinates that'll tell us where to go.
You think you just transport it out instead of digging it out? But
Beverly's had a taste for intensive dissection, and she's just dissecting anything.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She gets no frog
in biology is safe.
Mm-hmm.
No fetal pig will go undissected.
Yeah, and that's it, man. That's the episode.
That is it. Indeed.
I guess it was still a pretty good one. I don't have any major problems yet. Certainly at this point in season two and season one, I had enormous problems, but not
I
here.
Really thought by this time in the season, we'd have Geordi back. We'd have, you know, we would have the whole complement. Now we're getting, it looks like we're going to have everybody but Geordi back. And I guess Deanna back on the ship. It's just Jack, man. I just don't care. The Picard and Beverly relationship as presented in this show does not make sense to me. Therefore, it doesn't feel real. There is like this. I feel like that. I guess that's what the whole Jack Crusher feels like, fan fiction. And I'm not, I guess there's some kind of like barrier between me fully emotionally grappling with it, because I don't, if it's fan fiction, not just because the idea is fan fictiony and fan servicey, although there's that, but it's also, it's just poorly executed. I didn't
sometimes
buy.
The line between fan fiction and canon is merely a paycheck.
Well, this is true. This is true. Sometimes you get in all the big science fiction franchise a little bit too fan fictiony in the writing to the series detriment. But that's the thing. It's like, you know, when we were talking about two episodes ago, you know, you really liked the Picard Beverly confrontation they had. And I'm just like, man, it doesn't seem like either one of them. Like, failure to emotionally engage in that is now leading to me to not really care about Jack Crusher.
Sure.
Other than as a MacGuffin. So
I'm with you there. I don't care very much about Jack Crusher. Even though I like that scene with Beverly and Picard.
Well, in the episode's 50%,
it is an interesting MacGuffin.
Like, that's not, again, it's not that I was here for the TNG, not the TNG, the next generation.
Yeah, we're still getting a lot of TNG, and there's more to come. Like you said, we're going to get Daddy LaForge in here. We're going to get some Moriarty. We're going to get some lore. I think we've got plenty to look forward to. I have heard rumors. I don't know if this is confirmed anywhere, but I've heard rumors about Tasha Yar maybe showing up at some point.
The Vulcan or the Romulan hybrid Tasha?
Perhaps.
Because if they bring Tasha
or
back,
a holodeck,
that would be a fucking trick, man.
Right. Maybe they'll just bring her back as like, it wasn't she memorialized via a tombstone that was like holographic?
I was on the Windows 95 desktop. Windows XP desktop. Sure.
Maybe that'll just be it. He'll be like, Picard will be reminiscing and thinking about, like, you know, all the decisions he's made in the past, and he'll just go visit Tasha's grave. It seems,
we'll have to see.
It seems like you don't need to bring her back for that. You could probably just do a digital insertion, but whatever.
Are you ready for me to initiate the outro sequence?
Sure, let's do it.
I need to warn you, I'm turning off the safety interlocks.
I had already assumed.
Okay.
You pulled the phaser, yeah.
How am I going to feel alive if I don't do an outro sequence with no safety interlocks? If you'd like to reach out to us, even though we're stuck in a nebula and not receiving communications at this time, Picard@baldmove.com, the subspace tubes unclog, who knows what will happen. Follow along at twitter.com/baldmove. You want to know what we're doing, what we're releasing that's not Picard, and also... if you'd like to support us and what we do, get ad-free feeds, a bunch of other bonus audio content, check out our club, support.baldmove.com. Find all the ways you can help us make podcasts here at Bald Move. That's it. We'll be back next week for episode 6 to see the further adventures of Jack Crusher and crew. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.